Comics Coffee Metal Podcast, episode 101.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I am your host, Don Cardenas, and I hope you've been having a fantastic week. So, like all my best laid plans, my hope of having the podcast run like a well-oiled machine has collapsed terribly the past couple weeks. I could go into details of what's this episode has delayed and what happened with all of that, but you know what? I just want to focus on the good, positive things happening right now, so I'm just going to do that. First and foremost, the Kickstarter for mine and Steve Bryant's creator-owned book, Evie and the Helsings, is going strong. We launched, we funded within 26 hours, which is crazy. With roughly 7 days left, we stand at over 200% funded. A ton of stretch goals have already been unlocked from prints and digital goodies and things like that, and we are just absolutely floored by the response. It is insane to think that this many people are excited about the book. We're almost at 400 backers, and I can't. This is the biggest thing I've ever been a part of. I think I've been part of some anthologies that had tons of backers and sizable, equal size, if not more, sometimes. But in terms of just my name and Steve's name on it, this is the biggest thing, and I'm really, really excited, really, really nervous, but mostly excited about getting the book out to everybody. We're working hard on issue 2 already. We're just so bolstered by the support we've received for issue 1. For those who may be unfamiliar, Evie and the Helsings is about Evie Van Helsing, the last of the Van Helsing clan, who, with her mother Ursula's recent passing, is now inherited the mantle of the main vampire hunter in the world, and she doesn't want it. All she's ever wanted to do is rock, and she has her band, and she just wants to kick ass on stage and shred and do all that great stuff, but now she's faced with the fact that she is vampire enemy number one. What does she do with that? I guess you'll have to back the book and find out. In all seriousness, this book is just such a huge passion project for me and Steve. It incorporates so many things that we love. Just awesome horror stuff. There's going to be a ton of blood and comedy and Easter eggs and music and metal and just sappy, good old emotions and feelings and all the great stuff that me and Steve seem to be very simpatico on wanting to put into the book. So I've been having the time of my life drawing this book and helping it come alive with Steve. And the colors by Jason Millay are just, they make me feel like I'm a better artist than I am, because he is so awesome at his color choices and in the research he puts in. And you know, we have some analogs to famous music venues, and he actually like researched the lighting that they would use and stuff like that. And yeah, Jason's just amazing, and he's did such a fantastic job on the book that it just influences me even more as I'm working on issue 2. So please go check it out, evieandthehelsings.com. There will be a link in the show note. All right, and next up is some more positive stuff, some recommendations. First up, I'm going to have a music recommendation for you all, and that is the fine music of my guest today, Ashen Horde. Ashen Horde is a death metal project from Trevor Ports and a few other fellows, and while it's been a mainly solo affair, as we talk about in the interview, this was the actual like first full-on band recording of an album, and It's just a really, 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 really great album. Antimony is the name of the album, and it's just such really good death metal, and it brings a lot of really cool different influences to it that just kind of make it that much more interesting, that much more in-depth, a much deeper experience than just, you know, blast beats and vocals and tremolo picking and things like that. There's a ton of great songs on here. We talk a lot about the album in the interview, so I don't want to go on too long about it, but I definitely highly recommend if you like death metal or kind of dipping your toes into that kind of stuff, or like some good thrash metal and don't mind some harsh vocals, Ashen Horde's Antimony is definitely something you should check it out. My favorite song on this album is tough to choose. It really is, but I'm going to have to go with The Neophyte. simply because Trevor has some clean vocals on here that contrast with the harsh vocals of their other vocalists, that it sounds like, I don't know, the harmonies Trevor's doing here are almost like Alice in Chains style harmonies in like a death metal song. And that is just, that's just fucking sick. I just love it. There's a ton of great, awesome playing and riffing all throughout the album, but the Neophyte just, you know, it showcases this, the craziness and the wildly different inspirations that you can bring into metal and still have it just sound so awesome and different and fresh, even if it's a style that you may not think is welcoming of something like that. So definitely check out Neophyte. I'm going to have a little clip of it now. It's Antimony, Ashen Horde. It's available everywhere. Stay tuned for the interview with Trevor. He's such an awesome dude. And yeah, while we definitely get into the nerdy stuff about music and recording and stuff, he's also a big comic nerd, and there's a ton of fun stuff and talk about that too. So I think you're all going to like Trevor. I really dig him. He's an awesome dude, awesome musician. So enough yak in there. Ashen Horde, Antimony. This is the Neophyte. All right, for my comic book recommendation this week, I am going with Funrama by Ryan Kelly. Funrama is an ongoing series that Ryan does in his own time and on his Patreon. He's been working on it for, well, he's had the characters since the 80s when he was 10 years old per his website. And he's been working on this book for over a decade now. And it's been a real blast seeing every issue come out. I've been a fan for quite a while. Full disclosure, I did have a pinup that Ryan paid me for in issue 3, The Cactus Man. And that was one of the earliest, most inspirational instances of my artistic life when Ryan was like, yeah, sure, I want you in my book. I'm going to pay you be a pinup in my book. And I'm just like, whoa, I didn't. Okay, cool. I would have did this shit for free. Ryan, if you're listening to this, no paybacks. Just kidding. And I've just been a fan of Ryan's for so long. He's an amazing, amazing talent. He's done fantastic work on, DC and Vertigo books. And, one of my favorite miniseries 3 he did with Kieran Gillen and Jordi Belair. He's just a phenomenal artist. His inks are like lush and just slick and detailed. And I look at his stuff and I'm like, I really need to learn how to use a brush. And then I remember I'm terrible at brush. I have a really terrible hand for it, but it makes me want to be a better inker every time I see his stuff. And Funrama being in black and white for the majority of it, it just showcases just how immensely talented and skilled this gentleman is with his inks. If I had to like describe his style, it's probably like the best parts of like Alan Davis and some Barry Windsor Smith mixed with maybe some John Byrne here and there. But it's just, you know, Ryan Kelly looks like Ryan Kelly. I can instantly just see his art. If you see his watercolors when he posts commissions and stuff online, they're just phenomenal. Like, the word that keeps coming up whenever I look at it is just lush. It just feels lush. Like, I don't know how else to say it. It's the only thing my brain can come to whenever I look at his stuff. As for the book Funrama, it is, as the title describes, incredibly fun. Ryan has a fantastic way of taking a lot of homages to just everything comic, you know, from the mutant punks in issue 1, like the anti-authority, all destruction minded kind of to like the superhero sci-fi kind of stuff to the, you know, pastiches on the gods and the street level superheroes and things like that. each issue of Funrama kind of showcases Ryan's love for comics and everything comics is and was and can be. And it's all wrapped up in this. I don't want to talk too much about the plot because a lot of the enjoyment of the book is also seeing things develop, seeing things kind of come together and coalesce to this Funrama thing. And it's just been a joy to see it. He's been, he's been working on it for about 10 years or so now, I want to say. And steam is building behind it, though. And I really, really hope that he gets to continue to do this. And I hope it continues to be, or I hope it is or will be something that he can focus more on lucratively and get more of it done, because I want to see where this series goes. I don't know if he's got a planned ending for it or whatever, but it is just a fun celebration of comics while also being fresh and exciting and just beautiful to look at. So Ryan Kelly's Funrama, it is a book I cannot recommend to anybody, especially if you are a hardcore comic person and you just love celebrations of the medium. And this is exactly what this is. I'll make sure there's a link to that show notes. Ryan's always got kind of bundles and stuff going on, and I'm kicking myself because he had a really killer Black Friday bundle for all the print issues, a sketch for like a ridiculously low price, and I'm kicking myself for not taking advantage of that. So if that comes around again this year, you bet your bippy I'm jumping on that train. Ryan's awesome, and you should definitely 100% support him because he makes amazing books. He's a super talented artist, and he deserves the work deserves to be supported and celebrated. So link in the show notes, definitely check it out. Funrama. All right, this week I have a coffee recommendation for y'all. This one's a long time coming. I drank these quite a while ago, and I've been kind of saving them in my back pocket for when I was able to do more recommendations. And that is, it's two different blends from the company Black and Bold. Black and Bold is a really awesome roaster who their proceeds go to help benefit underserved communities. And their two roasts, I tried two different roasts. I tried their Smooth Operator, S-M-O-O-V Operator, their dark roast there, and their Rise and Grind medium roast. And both are just phenomenal. I was lucky to find these at my local grocery store, and they were, you know, actually on sale for a really good price. So I'm like, okay, let me check this out. You know, I like the message behind the brand. I'm pretty sure I've heard of them before, but also with a name like Smooth Operator, I'm like, for the dark roast, I'm like, I have to check this out, right? And it's amazing. The dark roast is very, very dark, but it's very, very flavorful. It's got a lot of those good chocolatey notes I like in a dark roast. And whether I did a French press or a full pot from a drip coffee maker, it was, you know, really, really good both ways. It paired really, really well with just less than I usually use on my coffee, which I was surprised on, because usually with darker roast, it can swing the other way. But like whatever bitter notes you might have had in the dark roast, like, they reacted to the creamer I use in a much different way than the other ones do. And it was kind of nice because a lot more of that coffee flavor just seemed to be like pumped up because of that. And I really, really enjoyed that. Their Rise and Grind, really, really fantastic medium roast. Not my favorite medium roast. You know, I still have my favorites, but, you know, I'm not going to say no to it. You know, I see it on sale. I need to get some coffee. My rootless shipment's not going to be coming in anytime soon. Sure thing. I'm gonna pick it up. Again, I love the company's message. I love their efforts, and so supporting them is like a no-brainer if I can. But definitely the smooth. If you like a dark roast, their Smooth Operator, I highly recommend it. It's one of the best dark roasts I've had. I don't know how to rank the dark roast because they all do something different. Different brands I enjoy, but this one's definitely a good, it's a really good winter dark. I think I could put it that way. Like, most of the time I've had it, it was like at night and it's like really cold out, and just kind of, it was like perfect that setting. So your experience may vary, but that's where I enjoyed it the most. So I definitely would check that out. And before I wrap up the coffee recommendation, I do want to say, if you have a coffee drip maker, I've been doing something that I think really, really enhances the flavor I'm getting out of my coffee with a drip maker, a drip coffee maker. And that is, one, if your coffee maker has a hide a cup feature, a sneak a cup feature, where you can kind of like take out the carafe and it doesn't drip down automatically, it kind of holds it up. If it does that, then you can do this. I think Min's YouTube channel, the coffee guy there, mentioned this, and I guess they called it a bloom. So, because when the coffee goes into the filter and all that, the roast kind of, the grinds, you know, they kind of bloom out a little bit. And they don't always get initially saturated when that happens, depending on your drip maker. Mine's usually good about that. But what I do is I take out the carafe, and then I let it build up a bit. You know, then I kind of open up the top a little bit, mix around the kind of like you would a French press, mix the grinds and make sure they're all getting traded. And before it's too late and it starts overflowing on the top, I put the carafe back in, let it drain down. Then I repeat that process again. Granted, a lot of people have drip coffee makers because, like, I don't want to mess with this. But if you can and have the attention span to, like, stay with it, like, because there's been a couple times where I forgot I was doing that, and next thing I know, my coffee's overflowing off the top of the coffee maker, and I got a much bigger mess on my hands. But you can do that. I highly recommend you try that out with your coffee, because it definitely gives you that kind of like a good in between doing like a French pour over versus just the standard coffee drip, and make sure that you get the most out of your grounds every single time. So I'm sure you could, if you look up double bloom or something like that on YouTube for coffee, I'm pretty sure someone can explain it a lot more technically accurate than I do. But hopefully I explained it well enough for you all to try out. That's it for my recommendations this week, and let's get to that guest. All right, it is now time for my guest. I was introduced to this person by my previous guest, Marcusan Naso, who was very insistent that I talk to this person and that we would get along and we would nerd out about all the awesome, appropriate things. So I was really excited. Marcusan pointed me towards this person's musical works, and I got even more excited because it's really, really good shit. And yeah, I'm pleased to have on the show today the clean vocalist and guitar player of Ashen Horde, Trevor Ports. Trevor, thank you for coming on today.
Hello. Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Is this a bad time to say I don't like metal, comics, or coffee?
I wish you told me beforehand, but I think I think we could wing it. Do you like, I don't know.
I like water, country music, and like technical manuals.
Oh, well, that's my jam. Let's
all right. You know,
let's talk about the specs of the Boeing 797. I'm talking about.
All right. That's a thrilling read right there.
But you have a really awesome new album coming out with Ashen Horde, and the first couple singles were out, and I really, really dug with some really, really awesome black metal, death metal genre type stuff. And I want to talk to you about the production of it and kind of all that kind of nerdy good shit with the gear and all that. But before that, I got to do it. I got to ask. Trevor, comics, coffee, metal, what are you digging right now?
Yeah, right. So I was thinking about this a lot today, and I'm going to go ahead and knock the coffee one out first because true to form, that first part, too, I guess it was like a two truths and a lie. I am not a coffee drinker, never have been, like the smell, never got into it. So not much to say on the coffee front, but in the beverage realm, I guess, I'm kind of boring. I used to drink a lot of soda. Now I'm like the black unsweetened tea kind of person. Though I will say today, I tried that new Pepsi Starry. It's like their replacement slice. I guess they're trying to relaunch to compete with Sprite. So I did try a Starry, and it tasted just like Sprite and slice. So that's the most exciting beverage-related comment I can make today.
Yeah, before I really got into coffee, I was a big soda guy too. Like that, I'm still a big soda guy. That's still my first bad for you beverage.
Yeah,
So I'm with you there. I wasn't aware that they were, that's what that was. Cause Pepsi's been in Coke, but often both doing like these weird ass, like one-off flavor things here and there, which is just like, I haven't really tried any of them except for like this, was it like a cherry soda, but like, not like the cherry Pepsi or whatever. Like it was like a soda shop.
Oh, cherry. Just like purely cherry. Yeah.
Something like that. And it was just like, oh my God, this is really good. And then I like had the rest of the can and I'm like, oh my God, why did I have a bunch more of this? This is disgusting.
Dude, that's how I feel too. Like there's been all those, you know, the funky Coke flavors. They had like Dreamland and Stardust, I think was one stuff. And like, I have to try them all because Coke is my thing. Cherry Coke is like my go-to, but every time it's the same. One sip is like, okay, that was neat. And then it's like, now what am I going to do with the rest of this? And typically I can't find like an individual. It's like, I have to buy a 12 pack. And then I'm like, what am I going to do with the other 11 cans of this thing I don't like?
Exactly. Exactly. Where are you located out of?
I'm in North Hollywood, California.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't think that we'll have this here because there's a local soda brand called Sprecher. They might be over there. I don't know. I don't know if they distribute nationally.
No, I'm not familiar with the name.
But they're in bottles and their cherry cola is like tops. Like it is like perfect. I'm a big cherry Coke guy. That was my main drink for so long. Like in college, my breakfast was cherry Coke and a brownie from the vending machine.
Oh my God. That's a way to start the day. Did you crash like an hour later?
I was always on the precipice of crashing. I'm a terrible, terrible sleeper. I even now I'm still a terrible sleeper, but yeah, cherry Coke was my thing. So finding a really good cherry cola is like, I'm trying to give you my pedigree here. So if you ever come across it, it's really, really good stuff.
Yeah, I'm writing it down because now I need to know, because like, it's rare that I'll have one that I think beats the actual just regular old school cherry Coke. So I need to try this to actually see if it stands up.
It's not as, it doesn't have as much bite as like a Coke or a Pepsi soda does. But it's got just enough. And if you put it over ice, it's just like, it feels like you're drinking just like a nice dessert and all that. And the thing about, you know, having one of those is it's good enough to where it's like, okay, I'm not going to drink like four or five of these things. I'm going to have one. I'm going to enjoy it all. And then I'm good.
You're done. Okay. Yeah. Great.
So I'm not like four cans deep in.
See that? Yeah. No, that was me back in the day. I don't even think I could do that anymore. My stomach would explode or something.
Yeah, I get on real bad kicks with soda, and I try to balance it out every now and then. But yeah, it's easy for me to fall into that trap. Like I said, that's my vice. You know, I don't drink, but I love my soda. And my
I'm with you. Same. Yeah, that was the fuel guy in my early metal days too. It was just back then. It was Jolt, especially in high school, because it was as much caffeine as you could possibly get in yourself before practice. But yeah, God, the amounts of Coke we used to drink.
Oh. Yeah.
It still kind of makes me cringe. Like, oh, that didn't seem like a great idea.
Yeah. I used to drink like a diet Pepsi in the morning. Like I like diet colas just because that's just my flavor preference. It's not like,
right.
It's not any healthier, probably even worse for you than regular soda. But like, yeah, that's just kind of where my taste preference lies. But I used to be like a diet Pepsi in the morning guy. And my wife would be like, how can you drink that early in the morning?
I'm kind of with you. That's for all the soda love I had. I've never gotten the first thing in the morning. That weirds me out. And I guess maybe ultimately, right, it's not that different from coffee if you add a lot of sugar.
What I said. I'm like, you know, it's caffeine, it's sugar. But before that, though, I was also like a tea guy. Like I would have like a cup of tea with some sugar and all that. But I would always have way too much sugar. And thankfully, I've learned to cut, like, use a quarter of the amount of sugar I used to.
Yeah, that's something I had to work on really hard, too, because it's hard. And you get used to it. But yeah, I still miss it. Like, I'm still a sugar fiend. Like, I have no problem inhaling a box of hot tamales in, you know, a very short sitting. So
Mike and Ike's over here.
Have to try not to do it. Yeah. Mike and Ike's are also amazing.
See, Marcus was right. We got plenty of shit we can talk about.
That's right. Exactly. As long as there's sugar in it, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. But slowly I didn't get into coffee until like, you know, in my mid 20s. And that's, you know, pretty late, I think, for most people who actually like coffee as much as I do.
Right. Yeah, it's funny because my wife and I are both, neither of us are coffee drinkers, but we think that a lot, like when we're traveling or whatever, like, oh man, it seems so fitting to just go in and like get a coffee at this cool little shop or whatever. And I've got a friend of mine who wrote a book. It's a fiction book, but the main character in it is a coffee bean buyer. And so she studied and learned all this stuff about the coffee trade and was kind of trying to push me into like, hey, I learned all this stuff. Try this. And just like, nope, nothing took. I can't. I don't know if you hit a certain age where you can't develop a taste for it, but I think I might have passed that if it's a thing.
Yeah, I was surprised, you know, that just one day randomly, I got a cup of Dunkin' Donuts coffee and it was sugared and creamed just enough, I think, to pull me in. And then you won't know this because you don't drink coffee, but getting coffee at Dunkin' Donuts and asking for cream and sugar, it's like, you have better odds in Vegas of getting something consistent going because you can ask one location. Yeah. Can I get cream and sugar? And you get it. It's like, oh, this is perfect. You go to the next location. It's like, did you do anything to this? And then like the third location is like, oh my God, where's the coffee? This is just milk and sugar.
It's like thick and weird.
Yeah. Like, oh my God. So you're saving yourself that drama, but
that's right. That sounds like a lot of heartbreak, ups and downs that I just don't need in my life.
And I've become a bit more, not want to say adventurous, a bit more inquisitive about coffee in the past couple of years, just, you know, mainly because of the show, trying different blends and brands and roasters and stuff like that. So I get it though. I get it if it's like, it's just not for you. I still take my coffee with a little bit of sugar and cream, and there's people who just drink it straight black, and I try every new coffee I get black just to see if it'll take. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, no, I still want my cream and sugar. So I could still get it from people where it's like, no, it's just not for me. Why would you want this? You know?
Right. I'm curious now. No, I know this is your show and I'm now the one asking a question, but I'm always curious about there's the coffee, the like super expensive bean, the kind that is like eaten by some sort of mammal and then shit out, then you clean the beans and eat it, and that's supposed to be like super fancy.
I was doing a thing when I had a Patreon where I would ask stupid questions, and one of them was, would you try that coffee? And now I can't remember
right.
the name.
I always want to know, like, I don't think there's anything I love enough to eat or drink that has been ingested and shat out by
God,
an animal.
What's the name of it? I'm blanking on it. Yeah, I'm not saying I would never try it, but I'm not going to seek it out. If someone's like, hey, yeah, I got some of that cat shit coffee, and I'm like, all right, I guess I'll try it. Like, it's been treated enough to where I'm not going to get like, you know, I know it's not going to be like, I'm not eating shit, but it's like, I'm not going to buy it. Put it that way. Someone wants to offer me a cup. Sure. I'll have some.
You'll do it. You'll give it.
I'm not going to pay for it. No, thank
fair,
you.
Fair enough.
Good. Well, I think we got coffee pretty well covered. What about comics?
We got it covered. Yeah. Comics. Yeah. So, I read a humongous amount of comics. I'm actually really far behind. I was away for a couple weeks at the holidays and I'm just like, I have a mountain of stuff that I need to catch up on from the last few weeks. But, I was trying to think of like things that have really jumped out at me recently, because sometimes with the quantity, a lot of it just kind of passes in one eye and out the other. But yeah. So I jotted down, a couple things that I've really been digging. My top ones, there's a series called Dark Ride that Joshua Williamson's writing. I don't know if you're familiar, but yeah, it's like an amusement park. And the guy opened it. It's got like a really kind of evil death devil theme. It's very dark. I'm a nerd for amusement parks and of course the dark side of things. That's very in touch with my metal side.
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny and dark and weird. So I'm really enjoying that. I feel like it'd be an ideal thing to make like a Netflix series out of. But yeah, Dark Ride I think is fantastic.
You know, I'm surprised I haven't heard of that one yet, because I don't know if I follow Josh Williamson on Twitter or anything like that, but I know enough people who talk about his books.
And I'm not super familiar with his other stuff. This one I picked up again because I was like, ooh, kind of creepy amusement park. Yeah, that's right up my alley. But I'm really been digging it. I forget who publishes it. No, I should have jotted that down. but I'm looking it up.
Probably, I'm seeing like an image or a.
Yeah, I think it's image. That sounds right. Yeah, it's image.
Yeah, because that definitely sounds like an image jam. Because well, there's all these other smaller publishers. You know, the amusement park thing and the horror aspect. It definitely sounds like a.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty consistently good. Not as consistently perfect as Scout. We'll talk about that later. Especially since Marcuson's publishing them. But so anyway, that was one. There's a new series, Art Brute, that W. Maxwell Prince and Martin Morazzo are doing. The first issue is out. I think second one may have just come out. I haven't read it yet. But I was so enamored with Ice Cream Man and still am. I think that is one of the best, like, weird, well-done anthology series. So the fact that they're doing another one together, I jumped on it. And the first issue immediately, like, I mean, like, it's not quite as original as Ice Cream Man, but I just think he's such a great writer that everything he does is gold.
Nice, nice. I'm glad to hear that a lot of independent stuff.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so truth be told, like, I read every single Batman any way, shape, or form. So that's kind of my go-to. I honestly am not really a Marvel guy. Mm-hmm. Never have been. I watch all the movies and stuff, but I've never been into the comics. But when it comes to DC, if Batman is in it in any way, one panel, I don't care. I will pick that up and have been that way since I first got into it when it was right when Nightfall happened.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. I've been consistently reading it since then.
Who's your favorite non-Bruce Wayne Batman?
Non-Bruce Wayne?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, because of nostalgia, it's probably Jean-Paul Valley, but that first time after Nightfall, because that's when I got into it, right? So he'd stepped in and it was such a different, unique thing. I think others, I mean, I really like the I Am Batman, Luke Fox, right? Is that?
Yeah.
I really like what they're doing with that one. But I think that original dark with the, even though the costume was kind of bright and goofy, I loved what they did. It was like pushing all the darkness of Batman, like one step further to like, and I just thought that was great. And yeah, part of it's nostalgia because that was the first other Batman I really got into, but still think it's the best.
I was not a DC guy, but I dipped my toes in here and there, especially with the Nightfall thing. And I thought like the Azrael, the Jean-Paul Valley stuff, I thought it was really interesting. And as being a 90s kid myself.
Right.
Loved the costume, like, oh yeah, this is so badass.
Oh,
like,
at the time, know. Yeah, oh yeah. My god.
And you know, then you read later on, like, the I could be misinterpreting it, but I'm pretty sure like the creators later on were like, yeah, we're showing people like this is what people keep asking for, and it doesn't work, like this is not Batman. And it's like, but we're all right. Meanwhile, we're all like, yeah, this is fucking Batman.
I know, exactly. It's kind of, it was like, to me, it was just more into kind of the, well, not superhero, I guess, because he was kind of dark, but like, it was like a more superhero Batman, which is funny because ultimately the best Batman to me is the one that exists the closest to dark detective human. I don't want aliens. I don't want time travel. I don't want monsters. I want him dealing with like real creepy life shit. Mm-hmm. So it's funny that would kind of be my favorite, but that's actually something I've been less fond of in the recent runs is I just feel like they pushed him too much into kind of the superhero unrealistic world. And I liked those really purely dark Batmans. I kind of wish they would get back to that.
What did you think of the Batman and Robin, you know, Dick Grayson, Damian run?
It's at first, I really was against the whole Damian thing. I thought it was weird. I thought it seemed kind of cliche to like, oh, he's got a kid and now he's going to be going to be Robin. And I still am kind of weirded out by how young he is, but I've grown to like him. And some of the spinoffs, the Robin stuff, I think has actually been pretty solid. Yeah. You know, ultimately, then again, this may come down to nostalgia, but like Tim Drake is kind of my Robin.
Okay. Yeah.
That's who I really grew up with. And so he's still kind of my favorite, but you know, I've grown to accept Damian anyway.
Yeah. I jumped on because I was a fan of Quietly and Morrison and their work, because We Three really brought, really like solidified.
Oh god, yeah, that's funny. That's right, that was the one where Batman was kind of a dick to him all the time. I'd forgotten about that.
Well, their limited series We Three with the animal experiments and all that,
yeah,
that really brought me into comics back into comics after a long break.
Oh, nice.
And so when I heard they're taking it over, I'm like, okay, you know, I'll try it out, you know? And I was in the same boat. I'm like, you know, Batman having a kid and he's dropping, that's just really cheesy and all that, but we'll see. And I think what I liked about it is just because Damian's just such a little asshole. And it's like, you know, and Dick Grayson was just so like unflappable.
Yep. Kind of happy go lucky. Like, yeah.
And like, it was such a joy to read that, you know, when eventually Bruce had to come back and all that, that's when I kind of fell off. I'm like, oh, you know, I could have read like another 100 issues with these two guys.
That's right.
But, you know,
it does make Damian kind of endearing when he has human moments, though. I don't know if he's still reading, but like, because he's still that guy, but then he does have these kind of like breakthrough human moments. And I think because they made him so dark, it actually stands out more and makes him a little more endearing, which is funny.
I think it's a very similar setup with Laura, X-23, and Wolverine. I think where it's like the offspring that's trained to be the weapon. And like they have to like discover their humanity and all that. And I think I since Wolverine was my favorite character, I think that's where like I stuck with that more because I really enjoyed the all new Wolverine series where she took over the mantle and all that when he was quote unquote dead for a while. But you know, I mean to get back into more mainstream, even more mainstream comics. I know there's a ton of great stuff out there. It's just there's so much great independent stuff out there, and I only have so much time to read anything, barely any time to read anything. So it's like I'd rather read. In my head, I'm like, I'd rather read the 3 or 4 books that my people I know are doing.
Sure.
And I know they're going to be good and I'm excited for them as opposed to going and catching up on X-Men and House of X or whatever and all this stuff, which I hear is great and I probably would dig a lot of it. I just haven't gotten to it. And it's just one of those things. So I'm hoping one day to just like bite the bullet, get the Marvel subscription and just like do a massive, like, you know, take a week off of having to do anything.
Yeah, right. Oh my God, that's the dream. Like, and just catch up on everything all day, every day. Yeah.
And I say this with like a mountain of trade paperbacks on my bookshelf that I have yet to read.
Oh my God. Yes, I feel that pain. And you know, it's funny because you say that because I kind of agree. Like, I think part of it, and I don't want to knock anyone at DC or in the writers, anybody, but sometimes I do think they push for the quantity over quality thing because there's just so many titles. And I mean, you just get that. It's too mainstream. But then there are things that pop up, like in the Batman world. I don't know if you've read any of the One Bad Day one-shots that have been going. I think they're up to like the 6th one now. But those have been consistently stellar. Like, I think some of the best Batman stuff that's come out in years. And like the first one came out, I think Riddler was first. And it was like, holy shit, that was great. And then the next one came out, I'm like, holy shit, that was great. And they've just been so consistently good. So it's like, I feel like there are still people coming up with these really unique, super well done stories, but sometimes they get lost in the mix because there's just so much volume they're churning out.
I think, you know, as I realize now, as I get older and all that, I think my interest in the more mainstream stuff is when it's a take on on the thing, not necessarily this is the current continuity of it. So something like the One Bad Day or, you know, All-Star Superman or something like that, where it's like, it's a take on the character. It's not necessarily quote unquote continuity or going to be like referenced a lot, but it's just, you know, people having an interesting idea and with the character might not be 100% in line with their canon, but it's going to be good. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a different view on things. So I think that's kind of where my interests are lying with more mainstream characters and stuff like that. But then again, you know, like I said, I haven't really read a lot of the current stuff, even though I hear it's a lot of it's really good. So I could be, you know, wrong. all that, so.
No, it's a great point. I think it is because I think in a way, when you do it like that, you treat it more like an indie book. You're not worried about, oh my God, I need to come up with X number of issues that tie into the overall continuity, which to some degree maybe waters down what you ultimately want to do. It's like, no, let me just let these guys just do the thing they do well and don't worry about all that other stuff. Let them just tackle the character they want to tackle and you end up with something more unique.
Yeah, like the Vision series from Tom King and Gabriel Walter. Like, I don't care about Vision. I can give two shits about Vision. But that was a really interesting take on the character. And obviously it was enough to inspire a TV show and all that. And I'm like, okay, I think that's probably where I realized. I'm like, you know, I'm more interested in like what the take of the character is as opposed to, you know, what the current continuity story is and all that, which I think probably was seeded way back with like Age of Apocalypse. Cause I think about that story way too much as a grown person for as long ago as it came out.
Yep. Totally. I mean, I feel like that's like, it's so many of those. I mean, Dark Knight Returns is the one mm-hmm. I go to, the same kind of thing, but it's funny. I haven't read that Vision thing. Tom King is one of those interesting writers for me that he's kind of hit or miss. Like sometimes I think the things are just brilliant and sometimes I think they're so convoluted that I can't figure out what's going on. So I need to put that on my list though.
Yeah. It's really, really, it's really interesting. And if you're going in knowing it's going to be a bit kooky or just, you know, I don't have to explain it to you. You get it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I know. I feel like with him too, I kind of know what I'm getting into. Mm-hmm. It's funny, speaking of too, and kind of tying it back to other things. I don't know if you checked out Love Everlasting, his series. I think it's from Dark Horse he's doing that one, but or maybe Image. Anyway, that is a really weird, unique book that is kind of unlike anything else I've ever read. It takes the kind of 50s like romance comic thing and then throws it in a really bizarre place. So if you haven't checked that out, I definitely recommend it.
Okay. Oh, cool. Was there any, you know, I didn't want to overstep your plan. Did you have any of the books you wanted to talk about that you were really enjoying or?
I mean, the only other ones I jotted down, one was the series Mosley. Rob Guillory did it. I'm really a fan of Farmhand. I actually need to get into Chew. I never really got into that, but I know that's
Chew.
Like a really,
I actually need to get into Farmhand because, Chew is really good.
Yeah, so that's on my like on my backlog to-do list. And then the other one I've just been so enamored with is the series of their, you know, hardcover graphic novels, but Reckless, that's the Ed Brubaker and Sean mm-hmm. Phillips thing. And I remember back when they were writing, now I'm going to, of course, forget the name. It was the book back in 15 years ago.
Was that GCPD or... Or Gotham Central?
Yes, Gotham Central.
Okay.
And dug them then and then kind of fell off the whole Brubaker train, but recommended the Reckless thing and like, oh my God, this is fantastic. So I read all those. Now I need to go back and read Criminal and some of the other stuff. So I've really gotten into their brand of kind of modern noir. I just think it's really well done. So that was the last one on my list to throw out there.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's get into the meat of it. Let's talk about some metal. I'm curious to see what metal you've been enjoying because I do my best to be aware of a large swath of subgenres in metal, but without a doubt, pretty much every single time I ask someone to tell me what they're listening to, and it's like three or four bands I've never fucking heard of. And it's like, it's great because I constantly have things to go look at and check out when the mood strikes, but it's also like, man, this shit goes so deep.
Oh my God. But we'll see where I take you down though. But what's kind of funny is, I mean, I'm like an obsessed person. I've got far more CDs than any human probably needs. And I am into a lot of weird stuff, but I have found, I don't know if it's my age or what, but I've definitely found I don't seem to get into newer bands as often as I used to. I talk to people like Marcus on and some of the guys on the Metalhead podcast with him who are like, they're finding 10, 15 new bands a week. Yeah. I just don't have the time or the patience for that. It really takes a lot for something to stand out. So I tend to gravitate towards stuff that I've been into for a long time. But every now and then something will jump out. So like last year for me, it was Voivod. They've been around forever. Everyone always loved them. I, for whatever reason, just never really had paid any attention. And mm-hmm. their new record came out and I was like, became my top record of the year. And then I went down the Voivod path and all obsessed with them. So even after all these years of listening to it, there's still new stuff to discover. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Voivod because that's one of those bands where every couple of years I try to give them a shake and I mm-hmm. just can't get,
it just doesn't stick.
It all started because Metallica's my number one. So naturally I heard about them through Jason Newsted, and when Jason joined them for a while, in the early 2000s. So I'm like, oh, this is, you know, I'm Jason was my guy in Metallica. Yep. I started playing bass first because of him and all that stuff. So it was like, okay, cool. Let me see this. And I was like, I just can't get into it. And I tried their Ultraman EP that came out. Yep. And that was really fun. But I'm like, man, there's just something there that's not hooking me yet. But I keep trying because, one, out of respect to them, because I know, you know, the legacy they have. But and two, it's just like, it seems like once I get it, I'm going to love it. But I just can't get it yet.
And sometimes, right, it thinks that they are timing. And so I'm going to tell you this, it's kind of funny, Metallica.
Yeah.
So I've been listening to metal since, I don't know, for a bazillion years, it feels like. And I never gave a shit about Metallica. And I think part of it was like high school and junior high, they were so big and they were like accepted by everyone, jocks and everything else. And I was like, fuck that. I don't want anything to do with that. So I kind of turned away from them. Of course, that was like Black Album era too. So for most of my life, I had the first three records. I barely touched anything except Master of Puppets. And I barely even listened past Battery. I was like, Battery's cool. Everything else I don't care about. I knew it from the radio and stuff, but I just didn't care that much. But what's funny is during COVID, I had a lot more time on my hands. I was home a lot more. I finally was like, all right, I'm gonna get into the other records and see. And so, you know, I'm gonna listen to Load and Reload and Saint Anger and all that. And I like discovered, so this is 2 years ago, that I actually really dig them, including the albums people don't like. Like, I don't hate Saint Anger like so many people. It's kind of funny. Like, there's one that's like the biggest metal band on earth. I didn't care about them until I was 40.
Nice. You know, I'm a Metallica fan through and through. I like all of it. I like the fact that it's not all the same.
Absolutely.
That's kind of the reason why I have trouble with like Slayer or anything like that. It's like, I really love that song they do. That's it. You know,
I make that joke all the time too. That's so funny you say that. And I know
I don't mean to piss on Slayer or anything like that, because, you know, all respect to them and all that. But, you know, then I listen to a band like Obituary and I'm like, this is like Slayer, but good. And it's like, and it's just, you know, one of those things where it's like, I know they try to do different things, but it never, I mean, it's Slayer. Like, well, what different thing are you going to do? But exactly. The thing I just love about Metallica, I got in Load and Reload. That was my era. Cool. I think probably what, like a couple years younger than you then. I just turned 40 in September. So Load, Reload was my high school era of Metallica, getting into them. And then I went backwards. And, you know, so I loved Kill 'Em All just as much as I loved Load and Reload. And, and same thing with Master and all that. I'm less high on And Justice for All just because, you know, the bass.
Well, obviously, as a Newstead fan and a bass fan, have you listened to the Injustice for Jason, like, bootlegs?
Yes. And the thing is, like, it's great to hear his things, but it sounds worse because it's not mixed for the bass.
It wasn't done right at the outset, right? You're trying to, like, put, what is it, polish a turd kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. You're just, like, adding that on top of there. And, like, if you were able to tweak their guitar tones or EQ and drum EQ, then yeah, for sure. But, you know, and at first I was annoyed by it, but in the end I had to respect them for it, for not remixing it for the remasters that came out the past couple of years, because so many people would have wanted that.
Yeah. And it's a tough one too, because it's kind of like, yeah, okay, on one hand, maybe it would be better, but at the same time, it's also a moment in time. It is a snapshot. That's what they did. That is the record. Love it or hate it. It's what it is.
Yeah. And I think thanks to, like, you know, where everyone gets those stems from like the rock bands, CDs and stuff. And they got the rips from that. You know, I think that's kind of provided justice for Jason. People got to hear the stuff he was playing under there. And there's this really funny moment. And cause I was, again, obsessed with Metallica for most of my teenage years. There's a moment in the Seattle Live Shit, DVD video, whatever you want to call it, where Jason sits down and he's playing his bass solo and he's playing a part and people just start going nuts. And then they launch into one of the Justice songs. And I'm like, how do they know that's what that was, that part of that song?
Like, no one had heard it. How do they know?
I'm like, what? But, regardless, it's one of those things. But yeah, I like Saint Anger. I like a lot of stuff. I think there's a lot of really great songs in Saint Anger. I just really wish they didn't go so hard with that, with the snare and the shitty production.
That's the thing. And I think people just can't see past that. And yeah. I get it. There are albums that for various production reasons are hard to listen to, but it's like, but yeah, I think the songs are actually quite solid. Just can't get past the tin snare drum.
Yeah. So. Like, yeah. And it's like, it's this, those songs are as good as any other, the songs in their current era. And even like when Death Magnetic came out and that production was like, quote unquote, better,
like God, but still, to the nth degree,
still,
yeah.
You know, was just like, now, you know, my ears weren't like super, like I wasn't like ripping off my headphones. Like some people were about it, but I was just like, yeah, this could have been better, you know?
Yeah.
And I think they made up for it a little bit with Hardwired.
It actually, yeah, the production was backward.
And they actually, Metallica released another new song today.
Oh, I saw it pop up in my phone. I haven't actually listened to it yet. How is it?
Did you like Lux Aeterna?
So I don't know if this is going to be the good or bad thing to say. I liked it, but I wasn't as enamored with it as a lot of people. I thought it almost felt like they tried too hard to be old school. Like, I know this is the ultimate argument, right? It's like you want people to do something new. They do something new and then you hate it. And you're like, I wish it would sound like the old stuff that I love. Then they do something like the old stuff. And I'm like, well, that sounds too generic. Like the old stuff they used to do. So
yeah.
That's kind of where I felt on it. I thought it was fine, but I thought in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't great. Like it just didn't blow me away.
Yeah. I'm in the boat where I liked it a lot. I'm not going to say it's one of their best songs. It's probably not, you know,
right.
If I'm going to make a playlist of Metallica of all my favorite songs, it's not going to be on there. But it was nice sure. to hear them go that far back
yeah.
with their sound a bit and kind of embrace that a bit more, that Hit the Lights, because that's a big reference, you know, to the Bristol.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Absolutely.
And because I think the biggest problem people have with Metallica is the fact that Metallica thinks that people think Metallica should be heavier than they ever actually were.
Oh, absolutely. They talk about them like, you hear that like, well, they were the heaviest band. That was Ride the Lightning was the heaviest record ever made. It's like, no, it really wasn't.
Like,
it's not bad, like, but no, you're miscategorizing. You're remembering it differently.
Yeah. They were never the heaviest band, but they were the biggest heavy band. And that's the thing that gets people. Did they write some really heavy songs? Oh yeah. But like as a whole, you know, no, they had a lot of melody, a lot of groove. And I think that's why a lot of people like them.
Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, that's, you had to have something that would connect with a broader audience than just strict metalheads.
Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, also, I think people give Kirk Hammett too much shit now for like, you know, like, oh, you know, he was never that great, whatever. And like pointing to like, you know, the, you know, guitar or aerobics other people were doing and stuff like that. I'm like, he was never that guy. He was like a melody guy. You can sing his solos. You can't sing, you can't sing Hangar 18. Like you,
I don't know. I've listened to that song enough. I probably could. But
I mean, you could, but you would sound like an insane.
Yeah. I think people, it's funny because I don't know if that's in other genres, but in metal for sure. There's that kind of struggle of like, one end, yeah, you want people to be like, I want it to be so ridiculously fast and technical that my mind is blown. And that's cool. It's impressive. But like, but don't you want something that you actually remember and that like hits you? And so it's like, I feel like people want one thing, but they ultimately don't. They want something else that they're not getting. You know, that's why, like you said, like his solos, Slash, people like that who write solos that you can sing just like the rest of the song.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, you know, I will say that's one thing I do miss him doing is being more, writing his solos more. And I know that had something to do with like him and Lars working together. And now he just kind of like shoots him off the cuff or whatever. And that's fine. That's what he does now. That's what he wants to do. More power to you, whatever. But yeah, I think he gets an unfair amount of stuff thrown his way for stuff like that. And I think it kind of encompasses Metallica's, people's view towards Metallica as a whole. They're putting stuff on the band that they're just not. You know?
Right. They're, yeah, they've created this kind of false version of who they are. And I would wonder, like, if Metallica, so hypothetically, right, could they create a song that thing everyone thinks they could do? They did, would anyone actually like it? Like, it would have all these elements that people think it needs to have. This ridiculous shreddy solo. Would everyone be like, yes, that is the greatest song ever? They'd be like, I don't remember any of that.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, they kind of did that with Justice, where they did the technical thing and all that. And, you know, there's the people who that's their Metallica album. And I can understand why Black Album would be like, what is this to them? But it's also you weren't listening to the previous albums then, because, you know, just For Whom the Bell Tolls, Fade to Black, like, yeah, those have more metallic.
Those records were not solid thrash from the beginning to the end, like a Slayer record. So it's kind of funny, like, yeah, it's people were suddenly like, wait, what is this? And it's like, well, this is like half of what they've already done.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're just, you know, making them a little bit shorter and just, you know, making them a little bit punchier. And, you know, and I will fight people to the death. Like, I mean, I still think Savage Shoes is one of the heaviest songs.
Something that's always made me laugh too, is people talk about that record being like weak or whatever. I'm like, okay, if you don't like it, I can't judge you. That's taste, whatever.
Yeah.
But like, it's a heavy fucking record. It's still a heavy record. Like, it just is. And you're right. Sabbath True is just a heavy song.
Tell me, like, Through the Never isn't just like a really good metal song. Like,
yep, exactly.
You know, there's like so many underrated things in there. Like, yeah, Don't Tread on Me, whatever. But, you know, you can give or take that one. Like, it's just like, yeah, it is definitely just the fault, I think, of the listener of putting those undue expectations on things. But, you know,
yeah,
that's enough about
it. And it's got to be kind of shitty for the band too, though, right? To be in that position where you've almost hit a point, like, of course, at this point, they're going to have a million people that love what they do no matter what. But like, you do hit a point where you're going to do whatever it is you want to do or think is right. And there's going to be people out there that just think it is the worst thing ever. And that's got to be kind of tough. Like, yeah, people are going to fucking hate it and they're going to have a really visceral reaction, even though if you think it's the best thing you've ever done.
Yeah. And I think the thing people really need to keep in mind is, like, Metallica doesn't fucking care.
Oh, God. At this point, they shouldn't. Like, they're, to me, that's the dream. This is like the Dave Grohl, those guys, things like, they do what they want to do and they're going to be successful at it. And that's like, I think it was Isan from Emperor who made a comment about that. Like, the only two types of artists that are truly doing what they want to do are the ones that have like no following, no financial investment. They're just doing their thing to do it. And the people like them, like Metallica, who have nothing, they're past all that. It doesn't matter if it does well or not, because they can do whatever they want to do.
They'll go out on tour and make the money. And then, I mean, now that they can tour again, but yeah, they lose money on a concert film or whatever. Or an album doesn't sell as much, they can still go out and say, oh, we're going to do a short run tour where we're going to play Ride the Lightning in Hole. People are going to flock to that, and they're going to be, and they'll get their money back. They'll get buy all the commemorative merch for the tour and all that. And, you know, more power to them. But enough about Metallica. As much as I love Metallica, enough about that.
Get enough fucking press. Come on.
What are the bands you've been digging lately? What's something that's got you excited about metal?
Yeah. So, okay. So like I said, I listen to a lot of older stuff, not exclusively, but, so at least for the last like 2 weeks, I've been in just kind of the classic black metal world. So I was, first 2 weeks of the year was nothing but Immortal. I've loved Immortal forever. So Immortal and all their side stuff, Abath solo and Demonos solo, but love that. And then this week has been Satyricon every day.
Okay.
To and from work, at home, just making my way through the Satyricon catalog. And they're actually another one of those black metal bands that get a lot of shit, I think, because, you know, the first couple records are like very typical 90s Norwegian black metal, obviously, right? They were there at the beginning. They helped shape that. And then they really turned away from that into this more like black and roll groove thing. And I've heard a lot of mixed feelings about those later records, but I respect the fact that they did what they wanted to do and they changed and they really evolved into something new. So, same kind of thing, like Metallica, right? Each record I think has a very unique feel and they don't seem intent on repeating themselves, which I think is pretty cool.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Black metal is the one thing where I keep trying to dip my toes into, but some of it just, I can't get into a lot of it just because I think it's going to sound like an insult, but it's kind of like the lack of like dynamics in a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like when black metal like influences show up in things.
Right.
As a contrast, but as a whole, like I respect it. I respect like the really lo-fi kind of crazy stuff. That's just like, you know, the guys in the forest in the shack with his drum,
yeah, exactly.
with his drum machine and his guitar and his HM2 and is like, you know, just doing what he's doing. But yeah, I haven't found my in yet with that. And I try Satyricon and stuff like that. It's just, I haven't found my in on that, but I'm going to keep trying with that.
Because yeah, because it is like, I mean, every subgenre has got kind of a wide amount of different things that go on, different styles within.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think you'll find it. I mean, so if we're going to, I will throw out some recommendations. So I just picked up Campfar. I don't know if you've heard of them. It's KMPFAR. Their new record. And it actually came out last year. I wish I'd heard it last year because I would have probably made my top 10 albums of the year. But it's actually got a lot of dynamics, a lot of dissonance, which is typical of the scene. But it's just a fantastic record. That might be one you want to dabble in.
Okay. Write that down.
Reed, if you've heard of Reed, they're another Norwegian band. They kind of came out of the ashes of a band called Vindir. But the newest Reed record, Wild Northwest, it's weird because it's definitely black metal, but it's got a lot of really different stuff mixed in. So it's kind of like start there and dig that record and start working your way backwards. I think you might find a lot that like in there. And that's, you know, this has kind of been my thing. I tend to gravitate towards bands that mix it up. And mm-hmm. I guess, I mean, I'm not trying to boast about my own stuff, but I like to add different influences and I'm not very good at like genre purity. So those are the bands when it comes to extreme metal too, that I tend to gravitate towards are bands that don't just fit clearly into one specific genre. And admittedly, I'm saying this like Immortal are probably like as black metal straightforward as you get with maybe some thrash, but I like it when they do other things and bring other influences in. So it's not just put the thing on and 40 minutes later, you're like, wow, that sounded like one continual song. I'm not really into that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's but you know, and that's just not just like a black metal thing either, too. Apparent in all styles of metal. I mean, there's been plenty of like symphonic metal bands I'll check out because I like symphonic metal, too. And it ends up being the one song syndrome. And, you know, I can appreciate you not, you know, adhering to like, you know, super, like you said, genre purity and all that. And I heard that in your stuff when I was checking out Ashen Horde. And I really appreciated that because it creates just, again, like the dynamics, and it's just like, it makes a more interesting listening experience. Now, if the song was like 2 minutes and it's just full on blast beats, just going straight balls to the wall for the 2 minutes. Sure. Cool.
Absolutely.
But if you're doing like 5-6 minutes, it's like, all right, man, you gotta kind of mix it up for me a little bit here. Like, you know, and for some people who are like, no, and that's their jam. Like, okay, fine. More power to you. But for me, no. I would like someone to mix this up a little bit. So I think it's a good time to talk about Ashen Horde and your upcoming album Antimony. And you mentioned previously before we start recording that this is the first full band recording of an album. Usually it's just, you know, kind of you doing all the stuff and going that way. Was this also something that was like the way the writing was approached as well, or did you still write all the songs, showed the guys, and then they recorded?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, so I did still write all the music on my own. And when I do demos, they're very detailed, especially like with drums, because I spent so many years programming drums. When I'm writing a song, I tend to hear the whole thing in my head to some degree. And so my demos tend to be very, very baked. All the different, the parts, minus the vocals to degree. I try to give Stevie a lot more mm-hmm. leeway to kind of do his thing. But you know, instrumentally wise, I don't think that's a very good thing. Instrumentally wise sounds like nonsense from an instrumental perspective. I think they're very shaped in my head. So it was interesting working with Robin. He had done an EP with us back in like 2019. So I'd kind of gotten a sense for his, how he worked. And of course I was a fan of his playing from Norse and some other stuff he's done. But it was interesting because I sent him the demos, you know, versions with my program drums, and then of course one without, so he could record over it. And it was a really unique way to collaborate that I'd not done before, because in some cases he would closely follow what I'd written, which is cool. And in other cases, he'd have a completely different idea for what the drum should be. And, you know, sometimes he'd send something back and I'd be like, nope, sorry, that's too far off what I was originally thinking. Can you please follow the demo more? In other cases, he'd send something back and I'd be like, wow, that is way cooler than what I came up with. And then in some cases, even like would actually change the guitar parts to better fit what he had played. So it was a different experience for me, whereas in the previous records, it was like, it was all me. It was just, for right or wrong, like it was what I had in my head. So this made me think about things in a slightly different way. And like a great example actually is the, oh God, it's been a while. I'm trying to remember the order of songs. The third one. You think I would know the order of my own songs, right? But anyway, it's the third song on the record.
The Consort.
The Consort. Yes. Thank you. That one initially had a very different drum pattern beneath the main opening riff. And then Robin came back with this kind of old thrash thing. And at first I was like, whoa, that is not at all what I had pictured for this. But I sat with it for a little bit and was like, you know what? This is really gave the whole song a different flavor. And so I just kind of went for it. I tweaked the guitars a little bit to fit the drums, and it just added a new dimension to the record. That I thought worked real well. So yeah, so it's just a different experience for me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That was definitely something I was going to ask, if like, how open were to, you know, if since you wrote the music, how open were you to their interpretations, their changes and all that? And that's really cool to hear that, you know, you gave whatever they gave you back a shot.
And that's what I try to do. Like, right, I want to be open-minded about that stuff. I'm not saying I always am, but that's the thing. I don't want to think I always have the answer. Like, yes, I write these songs. Like, there's something I put a lot of time and effort, and I kind of have what I want in mind. But at the same time, other people may have a better idea, and I want to be open to that. And so I think it actually, in several cases, you know, did make the songs much better by going with what they had and then kind of working around that.
Awesome. So, in the production of it, were you guys all in the studio together, or was it a, like, you know, working from different parts and you recording yourselves separately and kind of just putting it all together in the end?
Yeah, entirely the latter. We have never been in the same place at the same time. So Robin drumming, he actually lives in Australia. He has a studio in Australia, so he works, obviously. Have not met. Stevie lives in Nashville. Igor, bass player, he lives in Colorado, and then I'm here in LA. So we did everything entirely remotely. So like I said, my demos tend to be very detailed. So basically I would just kind of finish the writing. It started, you know, we have to build it up just like you would in a studio. So I went to Robin first. He laid out the drums. I took that, built the guitars over those, sent them off to Igor, who worked up the bass. And we kind of collaborated on a couple parts. I really wanted to give him freedom, but there were a handful of parts that I knew what I wanted. So I kind of helped shape those. And then, you know, vocals, Stevie and I kind of divided when it came to the lyric writing. And so for songs I wrote lyrics for, I had a pretty clear idea in most cases of the patterns, because I had thought of it. For stuff he wrote, it was basically like, here you go, here's the song, here's the theme. He wrote the lyrics and he kind of did his own vocal thing. So it was, you know, the most collaborative record we could have done with none of us being in the same place at the same time.
Awesome. Warning to listeners, I'm about to ask some really nerdy technical questions. I will do my best to explain as we go, but I think some of you have picked up some things along the way with some of the guests I've spoken to. But sorry, this is the stuff that I love talking about. What DAW did you guys use? What recording program did you guys use? I'm always interested to see what you use.
Yeah. So I'm Pro Tools all the way. I have been for years. I will be honest. I'm not entirely sure what everybody else uses. I think Stevie uses Reaper. I'm not entirely sure. It's kind of the magic, though, of remote recording in this digital age is that it doesn't really matter. As long as you can create a WAV file, you're recording whatever you want. So, yeah, but I'm Pro Tools all the way. That's what I started on many years ago. And just, not to say it's perfect, but it's the one I know. It's the one I'm used to. So that's where I go for everything.
I think Pro Tools gets a lot of shit just because it was like the first big one. It was kind of the industry standard for a long time. And so now it's kind of like, you know, I think the people who like roll their eyes at Pro Tools users are the same people who like roll their eyes at people who have iPhones.
To go, oh, absolutely.
Of course, you got an iPhone. It's like, well, come on. Like, it's the one that's been there. I use Reaper personally, one, because it's really affordable, and two, it does what I needed to do. I know how to use it. But, you know, there's a plethora of other programs out there. It's really just, I think, preference at this point.
And I feel like a lot of it too, it's, you know, you said that about the iPhone. I'm an iPhone user. I'm not this like Apple loyalist, but it's what I've had for a long, long time. And so it's like, I don't really have any interest in switching because that's just what I use. And same with Pro Tools. It's like all of my songs and files I've created over the last 15 years are in Pro Tools. I don't really want to start from scratch rebuilding everything. So it's like at some point it's loyalty just because that's easier.
Well, yeah, my wife and I were iPhone users and we've considered switching to Android and all that because, you know, there's definitely some good Android phones out there.
Yeah,
but we're in the Apple ecosystem with our music, with the sharing of things and all that. And there's just like the minor conveniences of an Apple thing where it's like, I'm a PC guy. I'm not a Mac guy.
I am too.
I don't mind tinkering with things. I don't mind doing that stuff. But when it comes to like my phone, like I had an Android tablet, a Samsung Android tablet as my first tablet. And the thing that annoyed the living hell out of me was the how fast the updates stopped for that thing. And I got a brand new. And I'm like, this is, and how fast it was kind of like rendered unusable in a modern context. Yeah. And I was like, all right, I'm done with Android and all that. I'm sure it's better now in some cases or flagship phones and things like that. But like I said, we're in the Apple ecosystem. You know, we use iTunes for our music. We subscribe to Apple Music. And I know that stuff's available on Android, whatever, but like I'm already there.
But it feels still like you're like starting a new life, right? Yeah, it's like, oh my God, I don't really want to do that anymore. I'm nice and established. I'm comfortable here.
And also like, you know, now I use an iPad Pro to draw. And to make all my comics on, and you know, my wife has an iPad, and so it's like I can do stuff on my, I can like look up references and stuff, some, you know, or take stupid reference photos of myself on my phone, pop them over to my iPad through AirDrop, and I'm done. You know, it's 1, 2, 3 easy stuff, or you know, yeah, it's just again the ecosystem is what really sells me on it, not necessarily the fact that it's what it is. So I understand the Pro Tools thing. All your stuff's there.
Yeah,
all your project files are Pro Tools. So why?
Yeah, if someone could like magically say, okay, we're going to set you up with Reaper and we're going to make sure all your files are converted, they're going to open, they're going to work just the way you like it, I'd be like, all right, that's fine. I'm not that loyal, but there's no reason to go through all the pain and stress of doing it. I get frustrated enough when I have to buy a new laptop and then, you know, reinstall the plugins. That's like a week and a half long agony. I do not need to start from scratch on anything else.
Well, that leads me to my next question. Do you use, do you mic regular amps or do you use plugins? Which plugins do you prefer? Plugins are basically like a sub program, like an application. Think about it. Like, and it does certain things. It can be a equalizer, a compressor, a guitar amp simulator, an instrument. It can be drums. It could be, you know, so plugins kind of like this general term for just, you know, a plugin. You plug it in, so to speak.
All the toppings on the ice cream, right?
You got
your ice cream. Exactly. You know, this is everything you can possibly want to put on top of it.
Yeah.
When living in an apartment in LA, obviously, it's hard to just let things rip on an amp. So I got into that a few years ago. I got an 11 rack, an Avid 11 rack,
okay.
Because it was great because it served the purpose of being both an amp modeler and my interface with Pro Tools. So I was like, wow, this is cool. And it allowed me to record and work with guitars without having to mic an amp and annoy the neighbors. And, you know, then I could work on stuff all hours of the day and eventually just got used to it. So that's the way I do things now. I've, you know, kind of crafted my tones I like, which I used on the earlier records. This is also, you know, in addition to being the first full album that had the full band, it was also the first album that I outsourced for mixing.
Oh, okay.
So we worked with the guy, Shane Howard. He's based out of Colorado. And so sent him everything. I recorded everything DI as well as my amp sounds. And I think he ended up reamping everything with, you know, actual live amps that he had in his studio awesome. And stuff. And so it worked really well. I thought it turned out great. You know, it was a little bit scary to hand it off to someone. Not that I think I'm the best mixer, but it's just, you never know what you're going to get back.
You don't know what they're going to hear, what they're going to, you know, what they're going to think your tone sounds good as, and you're going to be like, oh man, I hope we're on the same wavelength.
Right. Exactly. Cause on one hand, it's like, I want someone else to do it because I want them to put their stamp on it, but it's like, but I hope their stamp isn't like way too far from what I want.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like when a penciler gets an inker, you're like, yeah, I want you to do your thing, but like, can you not,
are you going to like dramatically change what I drew?
Exactly. Exactly. You know? So that's awesome. That's awesome. So yeah, I don't have a lot of experience, you know, with the Avid stuff. I use a lot of like, Neural DSP amp. Like I'm a huge Gojira fan.
Oh
and
yeah.
When absolutely. They dropped their, amp Neural DSP amp archetype, suite or whatever, I'm like, hell yeah, I'm all in. And it is my absolute favorite thing. I keep going back to it. I've tried other ones. I have other ones. There's the STL Tonality Will Putney one. That's really good. It's got a lot of, it's got a really good diesel amp simulator in there, and all that. But you know, I'm, you know, I sympathize. I'm just a guy at home doing my stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
well that. But nowadays, right? It's like you can do all that. You can have this. I mean, I'm sure someone that owns a multi-million dollar studio would argue, but I feel like you can more or less recreate what used to cost a fortune at home. Need all this outboard gear and stuff that A, takes up space and B, costs a fortune. Like you can get this stuff pretty damn close, which is awesome.
Yeah. And I've watched more than enough videos and things like that to see, you know, the difference, like hear people talk about, oh, here's, you know, this thing mixed with this thing or this mixed by a professional mixer and stuff. Like. And I tell you, yeah, there's differences in some things, but is it a difference that matters? I don't think so. Like,
and think about this. And I feel like I'm going to insult vast majority of people here, but a lot of people don't even know or care.
No,
right? Exactly, it's that kind of thing. Like, right. It's a nuance. And yes, maybe you as the musician, you as the mixer, you hear that. And maybe it's like me. I don't know that I have a very refined food. So could put multiple dishes aside. Maybe I wouldn't actually be able to tell you this is by the super crazy gourmet chef and this is by somebody that just followed the recipe on the back of the box. But at some point, it's like, I don't that I care. If it tastes good, I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something I've come to appreciate more as I experiment with different genres of metal and stuff like that, because there's so many different mixing techniques now to so many of these things. Like I've gotten a bit into like the, I don't know what you want to call it, like symphonic deathcore or whatever you want to call it. There's this band called Distant, and they're really, really good. They have a lot of production happening and a lot of like, they're of that Lorna Shore ilk, I guess. And yeah. But they're very groovy, very, very groovy. But you know, the stuff that sounds good with them, like would sound absolutely terrible with like, you know, something more straightforward, like, you know, or some struggle thing, like Obituary or something like that. It's like, mm-hmm. It's going to sound like a mess. Cause you have to have a different mindset. You know, the kick drum's going to sound different. Like you can't have the same kick absolutely. Drum on both albums. So for me, it's just like, yeah, it's just, it's so subjective now that
And even within like the genre, right? I think you're going to get people that like things for different reasons than it. So one side you're going to have, they want the super slick perfection of production.
Yes.
On the other hand, it's like, no, I want it to just be super organic and raw. And there's value to both of them. Yeah. So it all depends on what it is that you're working with. I think, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's definitely not like a one size solution.
No one's wrong for sure.
Right.
But no one's right.
Yeah. It's like, does it sound good to you? And yeah. I know it can be frustrating. You know, we were talking about that with Saint Anger and stuff, where maybe there's some aspect of the production that you hate and you have a hard time getting into the songs because of it. You just can't look past it. So yeah. I get it. That happens. I have plenty of records like that, but it, generally speaking, it's like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. If it sounds good and you like it, then that's good.
Yeah. And that, yeah. And so whenever I, you know, do mix my own stuff and put it out there, like I think about it that way, like, just, does it sound good to me? Am I enjoying this? Then fine. And then, you know, I've had critiques about how maybe this doesn't sound as good, or this could be better, or whatever. And then I have other people say like, oh man, this sounds amazing. Like, and it's like, cool. You know, like,
yeah,
you know, and also being an artist, you know, you kind of have like a thick skin and stuff like that. It's like, whatever. Like, I made the thing.
Yeah, I know exactly. Like, well, fuck you. Yeah.
Whatever. You like, you like it or you don't. Like, if you like it, cool. If you don't, all right, go find something you like then. I don't know. What do you want from me?
Yeah, I know. You know, it's funny you say that. Like, the first couple records when I mixed them myself, I was very self-conscious about that. I'm not saying, like, again, like, I'm not saying I'm like a brilliant songwriter. I knew people would like the songs. That's not the case. I was confident in my songwriting. Mm-hmm. I was not so confident in my mixing. So, like, the first review where the person actually commented on the production and said it was good, I was like, holy shit. Someone thinks this is good. Like, oh wow, this is really cool. It like meant more to me than someone saying they like the album.
Oh yeah, yeah, and that's, I think, yeah, all creative outlets have that. When you know what your weakness, quote unquote weakness, is, and someone like tells you like, no, it's actually really good. It's just like, oh my god, ooh, like,
really? Right,
amazing. And I would say, like, you know, having checked out, you know, a bunch of the previous stuff from Ash and Horde that you mixed, the production didn't, like, it wasn't, you I wouldn't have guessed, like, oh yeah, he just did this all in his house. Like, I would have assumed,
right,
like, someone who's had experience mixing and all that did this, because it's mixing to me is kind of like lettering in comics, where you only really notice it if it's bad.
Yes, absolutely.
And you can notice it when it's really good too, and it really adds to it. But on a base level, it's like the most of the time you really notice it, or like you really pay attention to it on its own, as opposed to part of the whole cohesive whole of the thing, is when it's not good. And yeah, that never happened with anything I listened to. So kudos to you on that.
Thank you. But still, see, you saying that, I'm still like, ooh, that means a lot to me.
You know, and, you know, and again, I'm someone who I like all kinds of styles of mixing and stuff like that, because, you know, again, besides the point. So no, that's awesome. And, you know, kudos to you for like taking the step to say, like, you know what, I want other ears on this to mix this, to bring a different, bring it to a different spot. Because I think
the combo of that, and also I was done agonizing over it. Mm-hmm. I spent so much time fretting and mixing and remixing and tweaking and stuff. And I'm like, okay, this isn't fun anymore. I just want to write songs and play. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to let someone other do this other than me, because I'm going to start hating the music if I keep doing it.
Yeah. I'm trying to get to that point with a lot of things where, like, I like learning how to do things. I like learning how to edit videos, yeah, and do all these things and mixing and all that stuff. But I am definitely getting to a point, like, at least this is related, but it's not exactly like doing DIY stuff at my house. Like, I'm definitely at the point to where it's like, yeah, I'm confident I can do a lot of things if I do the research and I have this prior experience from doing other things, but I'm kind of done doing them.
Like, totally.
You know, yep. So I'm like, if I'm going to have to pay, you know, I'd rather deal with the pain of having to pay and figure that out than sacrifice several weekends to do a thing to save a couple hundred,
like,
bucks.
Your time worth?
Overall.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you know,
it's your time and your happiness level. And like, Yeah. Is doing that going to be the thing that makes you feel like you're worth all of it? Maybe not.
And I'm not at a point with my mixing and all that to where I'm like, okay, I feel like I can do this well enough, consistently enough to where it's like, I'm done. I've hit my plateau where I'm like, all right, I can pass off to somebody else and I can like be confident that I can do it myself, but you know, let them do it and then I can comment on it or whatever. And I can focus on the other thing. I think I have to understand all the aspects of a process, for me to like really like feel confident as a whole through it all.
I think that's totally fair too. Right. And that's like, yeah, I feel like that was good for me to kind of force myself to learn it. Cause, and then I was comfortable like, okay, I know what I'm doing, but I don't need to do this anymore.
Yeah. And it goes for music, it goes for comics. Like I learned how to do some lettering, do post-production stuff, do some coloring and stuff like that, because I wanted to know how, not necessarily.
You want to say you can. Yeah.
And again, it's, I think that's how I learned best. Also, it informs what you do elsewhere in other places. Like, knowing that I have what the letterer has to do, I'm more conscious of making sure there's space for the letterer to work in a panel.
Oh, there you go. Right.
You know, or knowing to like, not be too precious about, you know, making things a little bit easier for my colorists by doing things on different layers so they can color things a little bit faster, you know, just little things like that. Absolutely. And, the same thing goes with music and all that. So, you know, it sounds like you're kind of the same way. Like you like to learn the thing, to learn how to do it, but you're like, okay, that's not what I really love doing though. I love writing music and writing songs, and that's what I want to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. 100%. It's funny. I'll tell you, just kind of in line with that, it makes me laugh. So my other band, Abhorria, which is more of a straight up black metal band. We just finished our second record a couple months ago and same kind of thing. I sent it off to a mixer. I wasn't going to mix this one myself or anything. And I spent a ton of time. This is another thing, having worked with engineers now, is like prepping everything so that when they get it, it's in the best possible shape so they can just do their thing. And he came back to me and told me I saved like a shitload of money because of how perfectly it was prepped. And I was like, yes, this is such a moment of victory. Like the files were so organized and everything was laid out the way he needed. He could just start mixing. I was like, I have nailed it.
You get temple maps are all down and all this other stuff.
Right. I just felt so like proud of myself for being like, yes, I made your job easier.
Nice. So we're not done talking about gear though. I need to know what kind of guitars you're using. What's your axe of choice?
So for entirety of Ashen Horde's lifespan, which is now 10 years and somewhat before that, Rich Mockingbird has been my go-to.
Nice.
Yeah, that's it. I have several of them. That's just, yeah, I love them. So going way back, my first proper guitar, I'd had a couple of guitars, but I got a BC Rich Warlock, of course. Mm-hmm. I was in high school. Nothing was more metal than a Warlock. I got a Warlock. Mm-hmm. I loved that. I used it for years. But it wasn't, when I lived in New York, I think was when I first got a Mock, and I picked it up because I needed a fixed bridge guitar. My Warlock had a Floyd Rose, which was great, but I wanted to dabble with different tunings and stuff. And starting to work with a band that used different tuning. I was like, okay, I cannot deal with retuning a Floyd Rose ever. So I bought a fixed bridge Mock, and that was like the game changer for me. So ever since, that has been my main go-to. I've got a bass, I've got a hollow body. So Mockingbirds.
Do you use the stock pickups in that, or have you modded those out?
Let's see. I'm trying to remember. So they're different. So the one I use for Abhorria has got EMG active.
Okay.
The one I use for Ashen Horde, my main, they are passive, and I'm not even remembering off the top of my head what they are, but those are both factory. Okay. I actually have George Lynch pickups on my Warlock, but I haven't played it in quite a long time.
Nice.
I'll tell you my big tech thing on those though is last year, I bought a PRS because that's just something else I'd wanted for a long time for another thing I was doing, and had an Evertune bridge on it.
Oh, okay.
Holy shit. That is the game changer of game changers for me. I, after getting that and like, I am an Evertune convert. It changed my life. It changed everything about recording. So earlier this year, I had my Abhorria Mockingbird retrofitted, and my Ashen Horde is currently at the shop getting an Evertune bridge installed on it.
Oh, nice, nice. For the uninitiated, Evertune is a bridge system which, through a variety of springs and, I guess, black magic wizardry, ensures that once you lock it in, your guitar is in tune no matter what. You could bend the strings and it'll compensate and keep it in tune. It is insane.
Insane. Like, I knew when I was doing a lot of home recording, especially when you're double, triple, quadruple tracking guitars, tuning was the single biggest issue. Like, yes, you realize how imperfect your playing is, but when you get to tuning, like the times I would have to redo things again and again to get the tuning just right, that is gone. Like, I don't know how many hours I'm saving now since doing that. So I'm like a sales pitch or salesman for those, but it was actually Igor who played bass on both Abhorria and Ashen Horde records. He was the one that was like, dude, you have to try it. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And it's like, yep, done.
Nice, nice. It's, I don't know if I could do an Evertune. I know you can set it up to where you can get at least some play with bends. I think up to like a quarter step.
I was afraid of that too. It is no issue whatsoever. Okay. You can literally, I'm not going to get super nerdy into the zones, but there's zones 1, 2, and 3. Basically zone 2, note won't change. If you're set it right in the heart of zone 2 or closer to zone 1, you can bend and it won't even change the pitch at all. Like, you could bend it and it stays consistent. It's weird. But if you get it right on the cusp of zone 3, so right before I think it goes out of tune, then you can bend just like any other guitar.
Nice, nice.
That alleviated. I did have that fear too.
Yeah, I have a lot of guitars, but they're all like budget guitars. like my favorite guitar right now is like this less than $200 SG from Firefly.
Nice.
That, my main guitar is a Squire John 5 Telecaster.
Okay,
and
cool.
It's a really well-made guitar. It's it's a Squire. And a lot. That's the thing. Cheap guitars these days are so amazingly well-made.
It's like, not like cheap guitars of like the 90s.
No. It's not like our heyday of cheap guitars where you're going to, your fingers are going to bleed because you can't get the action any lower than, half an inch off the damn fretboard.
Right, exactly.
But that's the only thing you could afford for like a couple $100. There's like $200 guitars coming out with like stainless steel frets, which like don't wear, you don't have to replace them. It's like, that's insane.
Yeah. I think a lot of it's just mentality, right? You think like, well, it's cheap. It can't be good, but it's like anything else, TVs and all that stuff. After a while, they develop ways to make them cheap and not be garbage.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a trade-off. Like the tuners on these things are crap, but
sure.
As previously mentioned,
stuff that you can replace for less than buying.
I'm a tinkerer, I don't mind, eventually getting some like, even like budget locking tuners are good. So I wouldn't mind, getting some Wilkinson is a cheap brand that's, got decent quality. Like to the non-gear people. So I wouldn't mind getting like a Wilkinson locking tuners or whatever, get all and all that. But my John 5, I put the Joe DePlantier custom pickup.
Well, of course, being a Joe Gojira fan.
And a Telecaster. Yes, I'm that guy. But, and I absolutely adore it. But, I feel like, but I have all these guitars and they're all, but the thing is, they're all different. There's not, I don't have like a double of a guitar. The only guitars I have like exact same like shape of that are pretty much exactly the same are two SG Fireflies, and that's just because the one that my wife ordered for me for my birthday came broken.
Oh,
the neck was broken.
Let you keep it?
They let me keep. They said, "Oh, well, we'll send you a new one," but it was a different. But they didn't have that. This was a gold one, like a gold finish, they had like a nice like tobacco sunburst one that they sent me as a replacement. And that one came fine, but I'm looking at the neck of this gold one, and I'm like, I can fix this. It's a set neck. Like I can glue this together. Yeah. It's a very clean break. So now I have two guitars. Nice. I glued that one together, and it's
could have ended worse.
Yeah, but even then, like those two, like even though they're the same model guitar from the same company, one is like a pound. It's a pound difference in between them, the two of them in terms of weight. And then like the more tobacco-y Sunburst one has like a thicker, rounder neck. And they sound completely different, like even tuned up, like just all those different variations. Like I'm not a big tone wood guy.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not either.
Know, especially when I'm playing, like, you know, you're all playing massively distorted chords and power
that's
chords.
The thing, yeah.
You're not going to notice that. But there's definitely a difference in these things. So even then, like those are different. But I always want to get Evertune. Like I it always crossed my mind because for recording, it's so, it seems so just like rock, like nice, you know?
Yeah.
But I haven't been able to like find the right end for that. I'm really looking into solar guitars. I really like them. There's a smaller company called Deviant Guitars that I know.
I know the guy on
Instagram. He does some really awesome metal style. He has a thing called the Grimoire, which is like a really metal, almost like more metal than the Jackson Kelly Explorer shape. Like,
yeah,
even more wicked. Like,
oh,
it's,
nice.
It's nasty.
I actually do have a Kelly somewhere. It's in storage. I think that's one of my old school favorites.
Yeah, look up on Instagram, Deviant Guitars. They do the really cool stuff, but he uses a lot of Evertunes and stuff like that. So nice. It's interesting to hear you talk about, because especially with like your style of music, like you're picking the shit out of those strings. Like, you know, so that makes an 100 absolute sense and all that. What kind of bass do you have? You mentioned you had a bass.
So it's funny you mentioned, I actually have a Jackson Kelly bass. So,
oh, okay.
That I haven't used in a while. I think that's actually in storage too. Cause I was really into Kelly's for a while. I had a couple, I sold one. I do still have my old school one. One of these days we'll dig it out. I'd written a thrash record during COVID and I want to record it using that. But, okay. But for Ashen Horde, the prior records and stuff, it's also a Mockingbird. I have a red Mockingbird bass. Because of course, right? I had to complete the family. So that's what I use for all my bass recordings.
Well, no, I get it. Like, if you asked me like 6 months ago, like what kind of guitar shape would you like have multiples of and different kinds of Telecaster all the way? And then once I got the SG, I'm like, maybe I'm an SG guy. I don't know. I kind of feel like this. I have like one V, which I love.
Oh, cool.
I built it from a kit.
Hmm,
so
nice.
It's not like the highest quality, but I did like the ink slash paint job on it, where I inked in like Kirby Crackle on it
on cool.
a white finish and sealed it off and all that, and I put a dime bucker in there and all that. So that's my V guitar, and they're so cumbersome to play, but I love it.
I've always, you know, it's funny, I've never really spent time with them, and I can't remember. I was recently, I know I was in a Hard Rock in Tulsa of all places last week, and there was like a big display of a bunch of V's, like different mm-hmm. people's that, you know, that had played them, and I was like, you know what, dabble more in V's. I don't need to just go buy one, but I'm definitely V curious.
It's fun. Yeah, like if you're obviously you have to play it standing up. People can do it sitting down.
Yeah,
like but the positioning's too weird for me. What I really have started to catch my eye is there's this band called Night Demon. And they're like an old, like a traditional heavy metal.
Yeah, they're kind of like old school metal, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they all play V's, including the bass player singer, like plays a V bass.
Oh. And oh, I'm God, looking at these
things and I'm like, those things, that's like, I don't want another V, but I want a V bass. Because
yeah,
I look at that thing, like, that's just thing this looks like. He has a few of them too. And like the one, I think the most recent one in the most recent video was like a really nice new one with like a good finish on it and all that. It's not all beaten up on that. And I'm like, that looks really nice. I want this. And so, I was curious to see if you had an opinion on V's or anything like that. But
yeah, I dig them. But yeah, not enough experience to say if I actually love them other mm-hmm. than I think they're pretty aesthetically cool looking.
Yeah, yeah. My old buddy, back when, in the high school days and like that, he had a Gibson V that he modded to be like James's black V.
Oh yeah.
That he would play. And that thing was this monstrous, and I think he ended up having to sell it or something like that or whatever. He went through a phase like he was basically like, I'm James Hetfield, and got all the pickup. It's like his license plate was literally like EMG, was it 8085 or whatever.
Oh, wow. Yeah, like, that's commitment.
And then we went to Ozfest one year and he saw Zach Wilde play. And then all of a sudden he's like, I'm fucking Zach Wilde.
It's like, now I need the Les Paul with like the spiral on it. Yeah. Or the target.
He didn't do that. He didn't go that far, but he definitely brought next band practice is all pinch harmonics. And then he was also a big Dimebag guy. So he got a few, he had a dime. What is it? The, whatever that crazy ass shape is, the X shape.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what it is. The dime shape. I mean, it's just like, yeah, it was Metal Man or something like that.
Yeah. God, why am I
yeah.
It doesn't matter. When you think Dimebag Darrell, that whatever guitar shape you think he plays, that's what it is. So he went through those phases, and I never understood it because I wasn't a guitar guy at that point. I didn't start playing guitar until like, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, really heavily. Like I didn't like really start seriously playing. And now I'm like, oh, I get it. Because right now I'm a Joe Duplantier guy with my Telecaster. Yeah. And then I pick up the SG and I'm like, oh, I want something that's like a P90 sound. Like, wait, I'm going for a fucking Iommi phase right now. Hold on a second.
Mm-hmm. Now I get it, man. I'm the same. Like, I mean, honestly, it's just fighting the urge. But yeah, same thing. Like, I've always liked Iceman's, the Ibanez Iceman's, mm-hmm, partially mm-hmm. from growing up being a huge Kiss fan, and Paul Stanley played them. And then the guy from a band called the Wild Hearts, Ginger, he played one. And then Paul Gilbert plays one on occasion. I'm like, well, shit, now I need an Iceman. It's like, no, you don't. But someday.
Well, I was going to ask, like, who are your guitar heroes? Like, and it sounds like you have quite a few.
Yeah, I mean, God, you know, they run the gamut. It's funny because I think a lot of people tend to gravitate towards the shredders. And I certainly like people like that. You know, Timo Tolkki from Stradivarius is one of my favorite soloists. I think Alex Skolnick from Testament mm-hmm. is like, he's one of my all-time favorite solo players. But like, I'm actually like my guitar heroes, and this is where it's going to be strange for the super metal people, but like Steve Clark from Def Leppard, he was like one of my first big guitar heroes, and I still think of him as like the guitar god, the low slung Les Paul. He looked cool. Played cool. It wasn't like a crazy soloist, but he had a really unique style. I love that kind of stuff. So I love that. Let's see. Think of other. I mean, God, I love so much stuff. So many players. I love Ivar Bjornsson from Enslaved because, again, he's not like a lead solo guy, but the way he writes really bizarre dissonant chord progressions, he thinks about guitar, and I think in a very different way, which I think is what ultimately drew me to Voivod with Chewie's playing and going backwards to Piggy too, which is why I was kind of shocked I never got into them before, is like, I really like guitar players who structure and write things differently. They're not just mm-hmm. like power chords and pentatonics and stuff. Like, that's all cool. There's a place where it's great, but I love like thinking about things differently. Like, let's experiment with jazz chords and stuff. I just find that kind of playing more exciting as a player and as a listener. So I like Andy Summers from The Police.
Okay.
Favorites. Yeah. I love the way he thinks about guitar with like 11th chords and weird shit. So it runs the gamut. I mean, I can say my top two guitar solos ever are Return to Serenity by Testament. That's Alex Skolnick. And Wait by White Lion, which is Vito Bratta. So, like, I don't know. I think people that influence me for a variety of different reasons. But honestly, when it comes to really like guitar playing, tend to be more drawn to like interesting rhythm and structural playing than following and lead. I mean, maybe just because I don't feel like I have the I don't know, patience or skill to properly be a shredder, so I get put off by some of it, but mm-hmm. That's just the stuff I'm more into. It's kind of like the songwriting and the approaching of the guitar in a interesting way from a rhythm standpoint.
I totally get that. I totally respect that, and I agree a lot, you know. And I like hearing, you know, quote unquote metal guys talk about, like, you know, respect to other musicians about who influences their guitar work, because I think that makes metal more interesting when you can incorporate those things like that. I'm definitely not a Shudder type guy, even though for my Kickstarter, I promised that I would learn the No More Tears solo and play it live when the campaign was done, if we had funded in under 48 hours. And sure enough.
And now, well, that's going to be, yeah, man. That's,
and then, of course, I upped the ante. I upped the ante by saying I'm going to wear like an 80s metal outfit while I do it. So now I got to find some zebra pants in husky boy size.
I didn't know about the Kickstarter. I'm glad that it happened because I would have made it happen if it hadn't.
nice. Yeah. I'll shoot you the info if you're interested in checking, at least looking at it. After the show. But yeah, it's just one of those things where I like hearing about that, and it's great to hear, you know, that's your perspective on guitar and all that. And I promised you that I'm gonna keep the interview close to an hour, and we're already like an hour and a half. So I think.
Oh, good, man. Yeah, this is the stuff I love to talk about. And honestly, my wife probably loves that I can go blab about it with someone else.
Same. Like I save my wife so much, not that she cares, but you know, so much grief about like, oh, you know, this thing and this guitar thing and this comic book thing. And she's like, cool. Mm-hmm.
Like, all right.
I'll listen because I love you and I'm a supportive partner, but like, don't you have a podcast for this?
Yep, exactly.
So, you know, getting to the stuff that I want to direct people to, that is Ashen Horde. You guys have a new album coming out the day you're listening to this, January 27th. It's going to be available on Apple Music, all the big places. I heard two of the tracks off of it that are available as of recording right now, Throes of Agony and The Physician. Both sound awesome. Like if you're,
thank you.
If you like death metal and that kind of stuff, like, and you've listened to Trevor talk, like it's not just going to be, you know, straightforward blast beats, and harsh vocals. You're going to have some twists and turns in there. It's going to be really cool. Some really cool stuff. There's a lot of really cool stuff that happens in the Throes of Agony. In that tune that I really like. There's like just certain structuring of like the the song structure itself is very cool. There's kind of things where it kind of seems like it's like slowing down, but it's keeping up the intensity, but it's not like a breakdown situation. It's just really cool, I guess, arrangement. If that's the word I'm looking for. The arrangement of the song is really cool, and it's not, I appreciate it not just being all breakneck, you know. Again, time and place, but
I agree. And I feel like too, when you, and this again, I mean, I like that stuff there. Like you said earlier, like sometimes just a couple minutes of brutal insanity and is perfect. But I feel like sometimes like mixing it up like that just makes the brutal extreme parts feel even more extreme.
Yeah,
when they're not, it's just not continual. It's like, boom, man, it hits you in the face when it comes off of something a little bit slower, more chill.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's the dynamics thing people talk about, you know, where it's like, yep, you want to have that contrast with things, and it just makes things more interesting. It gives a music flavor.
Yeah, you know? Right. And it's more fun from a playing perspective too.
Yes,
right. It's
exactly.
Like try different things. And yeah,
exactly. And, you know, all props to people who are like, no, I have my fun doing my tremolo picking and my blast beats, and that is it.
That's awesome. I mean, there's a reason people, and me included, love AC/DC.
Yep.
They do AC/DC. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yep, sometimes that's all I want. I want an album of songs that all sound the same because they're perfect.
Not so much anymore for me. Not talking about AC/DC, but for a while, Godsmack was that band for me. Where it's like, you know, I just want like some big fat drop C riffs.
Yep.
Hamburger slapped in my face for a little bit, with some generic angry sentiments, but it'd be a little bit groovy, you know, better drums than there need to be on that style of music with the really simple chords and all that, and some good production. And that's enough. Now they're not really that band anymore, but like the first few albums were kind of like that. So a nice big hamburger. You know, and there's nothing wrong with a hamburger, you know?
There's nothing, dude. No, it's that perception. It's fine. I know I don't want to spiral too far off, but it's kind of that thought of some people like, how can you enjoy a McDonald's hamburger when there are gourmet burgers out there that cost $30 and are handmade and stuff? It's like, okay, there's a place for that. But like, sometimes all I want is a McDonald's hamburger. It's mm-hmm. not about that. It's I want that thing. I don't care that it's not fancy.
I want the shitty warm ketchup, little pickle.
Yes, like I know what it tastes like. I want that.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Again, props to Marcus on for knowing that we
Yeah, no, I'm so glad this worked out.
That we'd be so in agreement on so many things.
Right.
But yeah, it is really that and all that. So with the release of the album, is there, obviously, I don't think there's going to be a tour because you guys live in different parts of the country and world, actually.
Literally.
So, but is there like a playing out aspect to Ashen Horde that happens occasionally? Because, you know. I'm curious.
There has
to see how
not that. Been, yeah, in the 10 years of existence, there has not been. Well, obviously, for the first couple records, because it was just me, and I'm not particularly good at playing everything all at once. So that it really was just the studio project. And then it's, you know, now that it's expanded and we've been doing it for longer, and this is the fourth record, it's starting to kind of nip at the back of my head. It's just the matter of it happen, which is a challenge. Stevie's on the road a lot with Inferi. He's also got a new baby at home, so mm-hmm. you know, he's got a lot going on. Robin's in Australia, so we would need some serious money to get him out, even if we could find a fill-in. Igor would probably be down, but it's one of these things, like, dream, and not to sound egotistical, I would love to be able to play some of like Euro festivals, because mm-hmm. get everyone together, do it in a big bang, rather than trying to drag everyone around the or wherever else and make that worthwhile. But so we'll see. I'd love to do it. I'd love to actually bring these songs out at some point, because I think it would be fun and super cool. Though I would have to really figure out if I can actually sing and play at the same time, because I haven't done that in a long time. So we'll see. I think it's more likely that Abhorria will actually do some stuff. We're talking about that with our second record coming out later in the year. So that's probably the closest. But I've also become very lazy when it comes to touring. I'm very content to just sit in my studio and play. So I need to drag my ass out and actually do this.
Well, I forget the name of the equipment, but there's this new sort of interface type thing where bands can like remotely sync up.
I've wondered, I haven't really followed, but like, we need something like that. Cause obviously like Skype and Zoom, there's delay and stuff, but that would be amazing.
And a friendly acquaintance of mine who has a YouTube channel, Taylor Danley, which I suggest you check out. Cause he does like a lot of death metal. Like he tries out gear and stuff with the death metal, like mindset and testing methods. You know, he's not playing like the same dad blues riff through amps and stuff. You know, he's checking out some gnarly stuff. He had a video on it, so I'll try to find it and send it to you, because it seems like, you know, at the very least, like, it would make maybe writing the next album easier, or if you guys were feeling froggy enough, like making a live recording like a live performance.
I was thinking that as you said it, because right, that kind of became a thing during COVID, of these kind of like virtual concerts. That would be cool if we could pull it off.
Yeah. And I, again, being the drummers like in Australia, I don't know if they have this there, but I know there's places that like have been doing, like, you can rent them out to do things like that.
Yeah.
Not that, you know, I don't know how cost feasible that is for anybody really, but you know, it does seem like a really cool thing to look at it. But this piece of equipment, I think, is probably like the most affordable thing, even though I'm pretty sure it's not that cheap. But yeah, I'll dig that out for you and see, because that would be a really cool thing to see. Because, like, you know, from what I've heard and all that, just like, you know, seeing some of the stuff played live and all that, I think it would be, you know, pretty rad. So
yeah, no, I'd love to see that. And it's just a different experience. Like, writing, recording is my favorite thing to do, but it's a, you do miss out on not being able to do that with other people in the moment. It's a different thing altogether.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, awesome. Well, Trevor, I think I've taken up enough of your time. I appreciate all the time you've given, and I've really enjoyed having this conversation. I'm definitely gonna have to have you back on maybe later this year when you're
yeah, that'd be great.
When your other project is getting ready to release their album. And yeah, so now is the time to let everyone know where they can find you online, where they can check out Ashen Horde and all your other projects.
Yeah, cool. So couple different places. So the album itself, like you said, it's going to be on all the streaming services everywhere you can imagine. Also going to be available on CD. I was quite fascinated by the fact that you can pre-order it at like Target and Barnes and Noble. That still weirds me out.
Nice.
But the CD is available there. You can also get it. Our label, Transcending Obscurity, if you go to their Bandcamp, you can find not only the CD, but a whole slew of different merch options. They've got jean jackets and shorts and all sorts of cool shit. So all sorts of Ashen Horde swag there. For the older records, ashenhorde.bandcamp.com. We've got vinyl, CDs, singles, coasters, all sorts of weird stuff for the old album. And actually, one last plug, the label, for a couple reasons, ultimately opted not to do vinyl for the new record, which was kind of a bummer because I'm a big vinyl collector. So we took to Indiegogo to try to fund vinyl, and it got funded this week.
Oh,
so
nice.
That's exciting. But there are still copies available. So if you go to Indiegogo, search for Ashen Horde, you'll find it to get Antimony on vinyl, a nice purple splatter vinyl. So if you're interested in the vinyl copy, you can snag one there. So
awesome. Awesome. That's awesome. Quick question. Are there jorts available?
Oh my God. I don't think there are, but if there's enough demand, maybe we can add that to the list. We can add all the weird combos like jorts and jeggings.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe some custom Crocs. I don't know.
For some reason the other day I just had this, I forget what was fed into my algorithm for an ad or whatever. It was like men's like shorts or whatever. And I'm like, there needs to be like a line of, it's like, you know, like death metal logos on the butts of like jorts, but like cut off jorts that are just a little too short, you know,
just like a smidge too short. Yeah.
You don't see the pocket lining, but you could, if you really, you know, like if you squat it down, maybe the pocket lining will pop out from the front or something like that short. And I think that's the next wave of dad gear is just,
So let me ask this question. If I were to make you a pair with an Ashen Horde logo, would you wear them whilst playing the solo from No More Tears?
Oh boy. I would. I don't know if my wife would let that footage be public.
That could be a career ender right there.
Or booster, who knows?
Right. You never know. That could be it. You could become an internet sensation.
There'll be some sort of sensation, I guess. I don't know. But Awesome. Well, Trevor, it's been an absolute blast talking to you. I can't wait to be a chance to do this again. I can't wait to listen to the full album of Ashen Horde and all the other stuff you do. Thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.